Good evening and welcome to the beautiful, you have to say beautiful today, Mornington Peninsula. Dean, what an absolute cracker of a day.
Good evening, Chucky boy, and you're right, Mornington Peninsula certainly has to be one of my most favourite places in the whole wide world.
I'm a little bit on a high at the moment because I've been up since 3 o'clock and I'm still, the adrenaline is still in me because we had a great session of fishing today with the whiting. We'll talk about that later.
I reckon you just got your second wind.
Yeah, it's been good. I actually went to Macca's and I got an Angus.
Yep.
You know those things.
I know those things.
And some, I was actually thinking of you when I was eating. I don't know why.
Do you know, Mitch, he said he was going to get me one.
Yeah.
And you've got one nothing in front of you, though.
I know,
it
mate.
It was beautiful,
so.
Mate. Absolutely. Now, we've got a special, very special guest in the studios today.
We do. One of my most favourite mates, this guy.
We talk to this bloke pretty much every week.
He does a terrific job. We do. We talk to him every week and he comes to us with fantastic information. And if that's not enough,
he feeds you.
The food that he has in that store of
the
his
pickle,
is incredible.
The pickle mussels.
And of course, we are talking about Tommy Boy from the Big Fish Fish Market.
Yeah, there you go. The big applause. He's a groupie.
Good evening, guys.
Yeah. How are you?
Thanks for the welcome. Thanks for the applause.
Fantastic.
Fantastic to have you here. So we'll put you on ice for the time being because this is my moment with Charlie here and we'll be back to you a little bit later on.
Okay, so what have you been doing?
I have been
interstate. You're in Sydney.
I was. So yeah.
Back home.
Yep, pretty big times for us. This time of the year, we set budgets, et cetera, for our for the next financial year. For us, it's the final quarter of the financial year. We have to wrap this one up and prepare ourselves for the new one. So we're very, very busy at this time of the year. And most people I meet and greet nowadays ask me, oh, how you going? How's the fishing? And I'm honestly not doing enough of it, Charlie. So that's the same question.
But the thing is that a lot of people don't realise that it doesn't stop because of this cooler weather.
Oh,
it
absolutely
actually gets
not.
Better.
Absolutely
and,
not.
You know, as we said today, we're out there having a fishing. And I actually reckon that this particular time of the year is the best time for me.
I like it for probably the main reason. Now, you and I both know that the fish don't go, they don't stop. They do shut down,
because of the water temp.
Of course.
Yeah.
But they don't. The one thing I like the most about it is that there's less people on the water right now. So,
absolutely. And you can get out in Bass Strait.
Yep.
And normally you get out there and, by sometimes 11, 10 o'clock, you're blown off because of the sea breeze.
Yeah, you bet.
You get that hot days, you get those sea breezes. You don't get those in winter.
No, you don't. Absolutely.
And it is a special time, I reckon, when you get out there in the deep waters. The areas between the Bluff and, say, Torquay, there's an area called, we talked about this before, the graveyard, Dean.
Yep.
You get anything there. And
incredible.
I've caught some amazing fish there over the years.
Yep.
And fish that you would not get in Victoria.
Mm.
You've
caught some really good stuff out
there. Just amazing. Mm. Just amazing. So, okay, so tell us a bit more about your budgets and stuff. You obviously go with your accountant, do you? Or?
Yeah, with our financial control. And you're obviously I'm part of a very large network, AHG Automotive Group. And we've got, I think it's about 120 dealerships Australia-wide, and this was the budget for the East Coast. So that's all dealerships in Victoria, New South Wales and Queensland. And they took us to a beautiful spot in Sydney called the Four Seasons. It's a hotel on the rocks, and we spent 2 days talking about budgets and our financials, and we are and planning for it, and next week we lock them in and we prepare ourselves to do it all for the following year. But all that does is it stops me from getting out on the water, and I'm actually hoping to get out on the water. Maybe I was talking to you about possibly getting out tomorrow, but I don't like the chances
it's
of that happening.
Well, we got next week. Fish aren't going anywhere.
Yeah, got next week, and I may get out on tomorrow night after work. I might do something and go for a gummy.
So with the cars, getting back to that, I'm just curious, like your new models that you get, you obviously get to see them first and test them first.
Yeah, we
How
see
often
the
does
prototypes.
That happen every year? Or?
Yeah, well, I went to the launch of the new Turbo Suzuki Vitara, and my God, what a sexy little car that is. I really like the look of the new Vitaras. I think they've done a really, really good job in designing them and finishing them off. Actually, my son has bought one for his fiance, And I got to tell you, I hadn't really ridden in one, and I rode in their one, and I loved that. And having a look at that new Turbo Vitara, I think they're absolutely amazing. You know, they just finished off so beautifully, and they're powerful little things. So they make the turbo petrol and the turbo diesel, and I think they're going to find their position in the market quite well. So it was a great day. Test drive the car, and then when they talk about all the specifications of the car, and then we actually got to go and watch the Melbourne Storm play.
Saw that on Facebook, of Amy Park.
So it was great.
Billy Slater there?
Yeah, my wife's favourite footballer, Billy Slater, who we have a bit of a chat about off air before.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Absolute superstar, redefined the fullback position in the NRL.
Yeah.
So it was a really, really good time. And to answer your question, Chuck, yeah, I do. I'm lucky enough to... you know, when Fiat had a launch day, this was crazy. Fiat took us to a go-kart track, of all things. Oh. They took us to a go-kart track to burn around the track in the little Fiat of Baths. You know what I mean? And the 300C, when Chrysler released that, the SRT out, they took us to Phillip Island, and we got to thrash them at Phillip Island.
That'd
you know, and
the island's on this weekend too.
Yeah, and the Jeep Grand Cherokee, when they were the new model change, they took us to Anglesey, the four-wheel drive track down there at Anglesey, and we got to do that down there. So that is one of the lurks and the perks of the industry.
Let's look at the tow side of things now. Obviously, a lot of listeners have boats, etc. Yep. Is there anything happening that you know of that's exciting, or is it going to pretty much stay the same for the next year or two?
For towing,
yeah.
Charlie, there is talk of Chrysler or Dodge bringing the Ram to Australia. Now, this is all alleged, it's not been confirmed, but they're not talking about the big 3500, they're talking about possibly bringing the 1500 into the country, which is going to be the competitor to the smaller ones, the Hilux and the Navara. But in saying that, they are talking about a V8 diesel going in it.
Oh, mate.
And,
how good would that be?
Yeah, going to be fantastic with a 4.5-ton towing capacity.
So with the demise, obviously, with Holden and Ford now, as time goes, you know, I think, 2017 Ford go.
Yep.
Would it be fair to say that we're going to start seeing the big Yank cars like that?
Hard to say, Chuck. I don't even know if that Ram will make it here. You know, they're saying, they're trying. There is currently Iveco is bringing Ram, the 3500 Ram, from the US to New Zealand, where they are converted to right-hand drive, and then they're brought on here to Australia. Those cars are around about 150 grand, right? If this little Ram makes it here, it'll be under 100 grand.
Okay.
So if that lands in the country, that'll be fantastic. To answer your question in relation to will we see the big Yank cars, mate,
Been Hawaii. One of the things that I absolutely loved about Hawaii, obviously, was the place itself, but the cars just blew me away.
It's very different.
Yeah.
But you've got to remember, over there, fuel's nothing to them, you know? Yeah. So, you know, they've got Navaras, and they don't call them Navara over there. They call them the
I don't know what the name is, but I do remember them going past there. Big notes,
big
on them.
V8s,
awesome stuff.
You know,
awesome
on the Toyota stuff. Have got the same thing as well. Big V8s, you know.
Yeah,
and we never see them because of the fuel side of things.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. But still, I love that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy, and be lovely if we could have that kind of thing here.
Yeah.
I don't know if that will ever happen, but you know, I know that Chrysler, Jeep or Fiat Chrysler are doing everything they can to try and make this Dodge a reality. Be great if that car hits our shores. It'll be fantastic.
Game over for sure. Kicking the footy. I reckon Tommy's kicked the footy with his old man.
Yeah, he may have.
Hey?
I may have. I was never much good at it.
Soccer?
No, soccer? Never much good at that either.
No? Just fishing?
Just fishing and working. That was
All right, let's kick it off as we usually do, Dino. Tell us the story of Tommy.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself. So hang on, we should actually probably do an intro. So Tommy, we obviously speak to you on a regular basis. Tommy is the proprietor, the owner of the Big Fish Market. You run that. You own it, but you have your father and your brother with you, is that correct?
Well, yeah, the old man's all but retired now, so it's me and my brother there in a partnership.
Yep. And what's your brother's name?
Pete.
Yep.
I've got an older brother, Joe, who comes in and lends us a hand when necessary.
Yep.
But he's focused on other things at the moment.
Yep.
So, yeah, me and my brother, the old man, and then a crew of about another half a dozen.
Yep.
Full-timers and part-timers there.
Very good. Now, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you came from and how your childhood and the family that you... Because you guys have always been around this industry, haven't you?
Yeah, most definitely. First time I walked into that factory, I think I was 6 years old. So that'd be 25, 26 years ago now. The old man was in there working back when the Orange Ruffy days were on, which was a pretty big part of this industry, going back into the mid to late 80s and early 90s. So he was there as their fish filleter and also worked his way up to their production management team and ended up running the whole show for them for quite a while. And he stayed there on and off, leading all the way through the 90s, by which time it was just about time for me to finish high school, and I decided that that was what I wanted to do with myself after spending all my school holidays, weekends, and after school's there.
Yeah, fantastic. And you are an absolute wealth of knowledge, because I've spoken to you a few times, as are all of your family. This is not a job for you. This is your career, isn't it? You love what you do on a daily basis, don't you?
Oh, most definitely. And I think you have to. When you're spending the amount of time doing it that we have to in this industry, it's got to be something that you enjoy and something that you're passionate about.
It's a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle.
Most definitely. Yeah. Yeah. It is literally from when you wake up till when you go to bed every day.
So Tommy, you've been there for 25 odd years. What changes have you seen in the industry in that 25 years? You must have seen gradual ones, and then you must have seen some sudden ones. So why don't you take us through what you've seen?
Most definitely. Look, where do you start? It's been massive, massive changes that I've seen. I guess the biggest ones that stand out to us now is it's to do with the public and the knowledge and the perceptions that the public have of fresh seafood. They definitely know a lot more about what they're looking for and what they're buying than what they did a long time ago. It was known as a bit of a dodgy industry quite some time ago. A lot of people didn't have a lot of faith in their local fishmonger and the people in that industry. But there's definitely been a massive shift in that to, like I said, people knowing what they want, and they want freshness, they want quality. And yeah, generally they know what they're looking for. Mm. And this industry's really had to adapt and change to provide that to the public that want it.
The good old internet, eh?
Most definitely. Most definitely.
Good old internet. So tell me, 25 years ago when you walked in there as a 6-year-old, the numbers of fish that were coming through and the variety of fish that were coming through, how has that changed?
The varieties were small. The numbers were massive. We're talking semi-trailers from the start of our street to the end of our street, lined up on a daily basis for years on end. But concentrating on just several key species at that time, whereas now it's so diverse that you've seen in our shop, we can have up to 20 to 25 different types of whole fish available, and then another 10 to 15 types of fish fillets, and then all your crustaceans on top of that as well. Whereas go back some time ago and it would be more so focused on three or four key locally caught lines and then a handful of the deep sea trawled lines.
Even things like squid, for example, that was like bait, wasn't it? Considered as bait. And then it just boom, it sort of changed. Like that was like an overnight type of thing. It was the flavour of the month, and now obviously we everybody loves their squid.
Well, most definitely. Calamari, it's one of the dearest lines that we stock now. Mm. Coming in at 30 to 35 bucks a kilo for whole calamari, it's something that's sought after. Mm. But still for food, but most definitely for bait as well.
Yep.
And what other things? I mean, are there, and you must have the conversation with your father and your brother where you'd look at something and go, well, like 10 years ago, we were getting nothing for these things, and today we just can't get enough of it and it's so expensive. What?
I think the prime example has to be the Flatty Tails. Go back to 20 years ago and, yeah, they were really looking for ways to almost give them away. They were looking at ways of exporting it and even possibly getting a name change that might appeal to some of the European countries a bit more than Flathead does.
Yeah.
But that's just grown into a monster now. It's definitely the most sought-after fish that any fish shop in Victoria especially will carry. Demands one of the highest prices.
It's amazing.
And that's what I was going to ask you. So when flathead is at its highest, what can someone expect to pay?
$70 to $80 a kilo for fillets.
Wow.
That is amazing. And when it's in plentiful supply, if it ever is in plentiful supply?
Look, it very rarely gets under mid to low 30s these days. You might have a few weeks of the year where you might see it for just under $30 a kilo. So anything from 30 to 45 is pretty standard.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's not unusual for it to hit 60, 70 and even more per kilo.
And the price doesn't affect the sale of the product, does it?
Well, it doesn't. It may slow it down a bit, but I guess that's it's all to do with the balance of the market. When the price goes up, the sales slow down a bit, which basically compensates for maybe the small amount that might be in the market that time.
Amazing, isn't
it? You get a lot of restaurants come and purchase from your shop?
We only do a couple of select restaurants. We don't go chasing them as such, but we've got a few that come to us that we work pretty closely with. So it's
That just shows you, Dean. You know, if the restaurants are coming near, the restaurants have to have pretty good stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, for their customers. So,
but you, mate, I don't reckon I've ever walked into your shop and there has not been a line of, well, not a line, six, seven, eight people in the shop at once. You know, like you walk in and I might only be, you might have had enough time to put a couple of scoops of pippy in a bag, and I've walked in there and I'm on my own, and then behind me there's seven or eight people all of a sudden. I mean, that's a consistent kind of thing for you nowadays, isn't it?
It is. It's definitely definitely very consistent like that, the flow of people coming through. That's something that didn't happen overnight, though. That's something that we've spent the last sort of 5 to 6 years especially really concentrating on, getting out there and looking after the people and making sure the product's good and the range is good. It's really something that we've focused on.
Yeah. So you say over the last 5 or 6 years, what has changed in the... What does Tommy now do in the business that your dad never did in the business, or what do you do differently? Because your dad's an absolute wealth of knowledge and just a lovely, lovely guy. I've got all of your family. Seriously, you're such a fantastic group of people, you know. But you must be doing stuff with your brother differently than what your dad did it, you know. I mean, you say it wasn't always like that. What do you do differently that dad?
I guess we do things differently now, but it's so much of what we do is just in consultation with each other. It's not something you even plan to do. You just be talking away and throw an idea at each other, and that turns into something. Most definitely. The reason that I say the shift has moved on the retail side of things and that's grown is that we moved away from the wholesale side of the business.
Sure.
And decided to make the move and focus on the retail. Mm-hmm. That's basically the main change that we've made. So.
Yep. And there's nothing like retail, to be quite honest, Chuck.
No.
It, you know, retail minimises your risk in business as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, customer walks in, customer purchase, customer pays. Mm-hmm. Whereas wholesale, all of a sudden you're delivering and it can be 30 days and so on and so forth. And, you know, someone goes broke and all of a sudden there's a massive amount of money that disappears. So we're the same.
With
parts, etc. For us, you know, we don't run a massive parts business at our operation, but we run 95% of our parts are retail. And it reduces our exposure.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
For sure. The wholesale side of it can put massive amounts of pressure on a business. Like you said, you're giving away your product for the lowest margin on the longest terms.
Yep.
And it just, yeah, it creates massive stresses a lot
spot
of the
on,
time.
Mate, so. Spot on.
And you get a lot of the local charters come in and buy bait off you. And that's important because if they don't deliver, you know, good food or good catches of fish to their customers, the customers are not going to come back. Mm. So it's important for them to get good quality bait. So you get a lot of the local charters.
We do deal with quite a few of the local guys from Port Phillip and a couple even from Western Port.
Yeah,
yep.
It's the quality. As I said, I've your bait is alive. You know what I mean? When you get it, it's that fresh. It's still alive. You know, I don't reckon I've ever used your bait and not caught something with your bait. You know what I mean? It's hard not to get something because it's so fresh.
We talk about that all the time, fresh bait, and that's what we mean by it. Fresh bait doesn't mean it's been sitting in the freezer for
four
months, you know.
And the good thing is Tommy will tell you if, you know, we got this yesterday, we got this today, or we got this morning, or I reckon you should try this, or you'll walk in there, and he's not one of those guys who sits behind a counter and waits for you to, I call them bankers, they expect to collect your money and give you a receipt. He's not like that. He will offer you a service, which I think is quite amazing, because I've often walked in and said to Tommy, I'll have some of this, some of this, some of this, and he's gone, I'll have a look at this, and you'll go over
the
and have a look at it.
Sardines or whatever it is. Lee, you there?
I am, boys. How are you?
Are you, has your pulse rate come down a little bit?
Yeah, I've relayed the story a few times this week, let me tell you.
Absolutely, and mate, you should be absolutely so proud of yourself, because I'm proud to say I'm your mate. Seriously, that's how well you've done. You've done a pretty amazing thing getting onto the swordfish like you did. So I think we've got to give you a proper intro. We've got Lee Rayner. Well done. Lee spent some time at Mallacoota, wasn't it, mate?
Yep. Yeah, it was Mallacoota. Yeah. We fished up there a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And obviously in search of the king. Yep. But we had other things on our mind for that trip. So and look, it's a great thing, guys, because the reality is that part of the coastline's always been there and it's always looked great, but getting out there was never that easy because you had to either launch over the bar at Mallacoota, which is not a good bar, or you had to do this beach launch with a tractor, and that's not easy with
things
like we're running.
So you've launched out of that ramp, out of the boat ramp there?
At Bastion Point,
it's not a bad place. Tell me, did they have that other side of the ramp dredged?
Yes, it had all been dredged and cleaned up and all that sort of stuff.
That would have made it a lot more comfortable, because when we were there, there was three or four boats trying to squeeze into that one spot there, so it was a little bit tough. So Lee, without sort of going into exact location and place, why don't you tell us a little bit about your adventure at Mallacoota?
Well, I'd like to lay a claim that it was all my doing, but it wasn't, boys. It was, as in any game fishing, very much a team effort, and it was myself, Julian Coyne, and Richie Abella, and we went up there to... There was a good look of water on the charts, and you know, we thought there'd be a few marlin up there, but the main focus was to also go and have a crack at swordfish, because there's really good canyons and deep drop-offs in that part of the world.
Yep.
And that's what we thought looked really good for swordfish, and we weren't the first to do it, boys. We got beat by 5 days by one of our mates, Matt Porter, who caught the first rod and reel swordfish in Victoria. He caught out of Lake's Entrance 5 days earlier.
Amazing.
Which is cool. Like, it's great, but it sort of spurred us on to go and do it. So we marlin fished, lost one marlin for the day, and in the afternoon we're like, the weather's good, let's have a go for these swordies. We sent a bait down to the bottom on the edge of what we thought was a good-looking bit of bottom.
Yep.
And, like, we got bit straight away, guys. Like, literally within a minute of that bait hitting the bottom and then snapping the weight off, which was a rock.
A rock.
We use a rock to send the bait down, because then when you get it down, you want to break it off and have the bait just floating naturally down there. And quite literally, we got bit within 1 minute, and that then turned into an hour and 40 minutes of grinding away on a big, solid, heavy fish that turned out to be 135-kilo swordfish. So
amazing.
We were stoked. Like, we were really wrapped, because we're like, A, our plan had worked, and our theory of fish being there was right.
Yeah.
C, more fish being caught in Victoria, like that one out of Lake Entrance, then we got one.
Yeah.
And then we were like, if we can come back on Saturday and catch another one, it's really going to cement it. And we got one on Saturday morning that went 65 kilos. And then, you know, at about lunchtime on Saturday, we got another bite on a swordfish and got that as well. And that one, unfortunately, came up dead. It got the last probably 20 minutes of the fight, the hook came out and it caught it in the bum and he drowned. So we had to keep that as well. But, you know, it just cemented that we've got a swordfish fishery here, guys.
Yeah, amazing, yeah. And you're an angler that that knows what he's doing. He goes, you go really well, and to see you and the excitement in your voice, you know, because I spoke to you on the Saturday just after, and I could hear how excited and how pumped you were to be out there to do it again, mate. It just tells you what an amazing feat it was. And
I have to say,
well done, you know.
Thanks, guys. It actually was a bit sort of weird. The first time we got in the boat, we were all really excited, but then we were all just sitting there, I think, in a bit of disbelief that it had happened as well. And I'm sort of sitting there going, am I supposed to laugh or cry or I don't know. It was almost a bit numbing because it was so good.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but then to get that second and third, it was just good. And it was good for us, and it's awesome for my ego and all that sort of stuff. I make no denying, like, we were so pumped. But it's good for the town,
and it's good for
Victoria. And that was our main focus. We're going, man, if we can get a second one, it's going to put Mallacoota on the map.
Yeah.
And it does. And the guys in the town were just so thankful to us for catching a couple of fish.
Amazing.
So compared to, I know it's hard to, you know, all fish are different. Compared, say, to the marlins that you caught, they go harder?
Completely different, Charlie.
Okay.
Completely different. Like, you're talking, it's more like a big mako shark. Right, they're big, powerful sort of fish, but with these unbelievable head shakes. Like, when they shake their head, they actually shake their whole body.
Yeah.
So the rod does literally just about get ripped out of your arm.
It's just like a head shake from a shark.
Yeah. But just off the chart power in these things. And then they jump as well. We had one of them jump out of the water. And, you know, you've never heard three grown men squeal like kids when a swordfish comes out of the water.
Yeah.
You know, we've all come off a great marlin season, seen lots and lots and lots of marlin this season, but to see that one swordfish was well above seeing another marlin jump out of the water. So.
And it is a different style of fishing, isn't it? Because you fish marlin and you're getting the hit on the surface.
Yes.
And you fish swordfish and you're bringing him up from the bottom.
Yeah.
Well, the bait, when we got bit, the bait's down 450 metres.
My God.
Yeah, and the worst thing is when you get bit, the first thing that goes through your mind, just go, oh, I've got to wind all this back in. Like, so, yeah, it's completely different. Like, guys, how is it like marlin fishing? It couldn't be further from marlin fishing than anything. It's probably more like, I don't know, snapper fishing. It'd be closer to snapper fishing than it would be to marlin.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
And you know what the best thing is, though, guys? Like, we wanted to let one of them go. Unfortunately, we couldn't. So we ended up with three fish, but they are unbelievable eating.
I was going to actually, that's our next question I was going to ask you, Lee, is what do they taste like?
Unbelievable, guys. Like, they've got this beautiful, firm, white flesh that's like the colour of shark meat. It can vary from white to sort of pink in colour.
Yeah.
Very firm, white shark meat.
Yeah.
But unbelievably good eating. Like, the taste of it is sensational. You can bake it, you can fry it, you can do whatever. So, not one wrap of those fish has gone to waste. We're actually getting one of them mounted. So, It's just good, guys. It's just good, and I urge people to go and do it. It's a bit of an involved form of fishing, but let me tell you, the results, if you catch one, and the reward for effort is like nothing you'll ever do.
Fantastic. So mate, where to from here?
More swordfish.
Yeah?
You're going to have to get Clarkie out there, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, like, actually, I rang him. I go, well, I always say, when I do something that, like, catch the fish, when he's not there, I just ring him and go, I had a whoopsie. And he knew we were up the coast, and I rang him. I go, I had a whoopsie. And he goes, you didn't, did you? And I go, yeah. He goes, how big a whoopsie? And I go, 135 kilos of whoopsie. And he goes, you could have waited.
Producer's nightmare.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And he's pretty well spur of the moment too, eh? So you'll give him a call and go, let's go, and he's off.
Well, he was just away on family holidays for the week at Lake Dentist with his family. So, but look, it's all good, and fingers crossed, guys, and if all the stars align and Charlie and and Dean, you know better than anyone what it's like when you're filming. Yep. Sometimes things just have to go your way. And
yeah, you
sort
bet.
Of stuff, it has to go our way. And,
yep.
you know, fingers crossed we'll get another shot and we'll be able to catch one out of Mallacoota or Lakes Entrance or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Saying that, boys, we got those two on Saturday.
Yep.
Matt Porter, the guy who caught one a week earlier, he fished on Saturday out of Lakes Entrance and he hooked three on Saturday out of Lakes. And he fought one for 3 hours on 80-pound tackle. It jumped six times and he said, it was a genuine sea monster. He said it was huge.
Wow. So let's break it down. So you, obviously, do you think these things have been here from day one and we just haven't fished for them?
Yeah. That's all it is. We're just actually going and doing it.
Yep.
You
Amazing.
Know?
It's a bit like the tuna.
Hey?
It's a bit like the tuna in 2006.
Yeah, exactly. And then one of those things, if you're not fishing for them, you wouldn't know they were there.
Yeah, you bet. And what gear did you use?
We were using stand-up 80-pound tackle.
Yep.
I'd really like to have a crack on one on whiter tackle, but saying that, I just want to catch a couple first.
Yeah,
especially for the camera.
Lost fish, as you know, on telly doesn't really give you much. So
Sure.
They're a really difficult fish to hook, guys. You've got this very weird mouth that's very, very soft that hooks pull out of, and they're quite a strange sort of animal, but they're a very cool sort of animal. Well, and the great thing is while you're doing it, you can fish for blue eye and harp hooker and do all that stuff.
Wow.
And in the next few months, if guys are going to go and do it, then it's also where you're fishing is where you catch your yellowfin tuna and stuff. So you can go and cube for yellowfin and do all that while you're fishing for a swordfish.
Yeah, amazing fishery, mate.
Awesome.
Seriously.
Awesome.
So Victoria's looking pretty good, boys.
Fantastic. Yeah, and thanks to yourself for putting it on the face of the map, guys like you, mate. So well done.
It's not me, mate. It's guys like Richie and Bella that just, you know, they've got the drive to go and do this stuff.
Yeah, no. Well done, mate. Well done. Anyway, buddy, thanks for your time this evening.
Thanks for the call, guys.
Well
thanks,
done,
mate.
And
good luck
I
with
will
the filming,
talk
mate.
To you soon.
No worries, boys. I'll speak to you soon.
See you, pal. All the best.
Thank you.
Bye. Wow, that's amazing.
There you
stuff,
go.
You know, so I didn't think they were that deep.
Mm,
wow.
Yeah. Well, he's certainly cleared something up. They are deep.
Yeah.
They are deep, and it's a very, very different style of fishing to be dropping your bait 450 metres down, like,
my
wow.
God.
I reckon even if you didn't catch one, it'd take you an hour to wind the thing back up again.
All right, Tommy, now, we've just got to ask you, obviously, you're talking moments ago about all these fantastic fish, flatheads, you know, squid, etc. You know, fresh, we talk about fresh is best, and fresh is best because it's closest to your shop. Unfortunately, now you can't buy anything from Port Phillip Bay, because you know the netters are sort of not there anymore. Firstly, let me ask you your thoughts on the decision to get rid of the netters.
Look, probably started off as anger, I guess. You go through all the cycles, anger into almost sadness for the people involved. The feeling now is just disappointment more than anything. Disappointment that a decision's been made for no scientific reason, for no scientific benefit, no environmental benefit, and all we're really doing is depriving the local people of a sustainably sourced protein that is available on their doorstep, basically just to please a certain group of people.
That someone has genuinely, you know, we often use the saying, you're taking food out of somebody's mouth.
Mm.
Someone has actually taken food out of somebody's mouth now, haven't they? By stopping them from doing what they're doing.
Most definitely they have.
Mm.
And look at it on a broader scale of the way that the world's population is growing. We've really, without getting too deep into it, we've really got a right and a responsibility here to be choosing products that we can harvest and we can source sustainably. Now, we don't need fertilizer. We don't need massive amounts of feed. We don't need to be cutting down forests or clearing out paddocks to grow these types of, you know, the fish that were being caught. They were there, they were growing, and it's an industry that has been going on in this area for over 150 years now.
Mm.
And just to turn around and decide that enough's enough, just to please a group of people, it just seems like a very drastic decision to me.
Crazy. So what are the effects on A, the big fish market, and B, us as a end, like the end consumer?
Okay, so from a business perspective, look, we won't suffer greatly from it. We'll find other things to sell. People will buy other things. It is a shame that we can't have a product that was caught 10 kilometres away from us. It's a shame that we can't offer that to our customers anymore. We did have a select group of customers that would come in and specifically look for those species of fish, your whiting and your calamari and your pike and your rock flathead. That was what they liked. It was what they've grown up on and what they wanted to continue eating. I guess the effect that it will have on the end user, if you want calamari now and if you want King George whiting now, you're going to pay the price for it. We've already seen the price of calamari go up probably close to 33% just in the last month. So
jeez.
That's something that we used to, and I'll be upfront and honest, something that we used to pay $16 to $18 a kilo for to our fishermen or to the markets. We're now paying anything from $25 to $27. So, you know, from a business perspective, you try and put your 30 to 35% on top of that.
As you do, because you make a living.
Which...
got your expenses.
It needs to be done.
Yep.
It pretty quickly turns your calamari into a $40 a kilo product.
Okay. So is someone, by making a decision like they've made, is someone enticing a black market to take off?
I think that'll grow even more than it already is.
Yep.
I think it was pretty huge to start with.
Mm.
And I think most definitely it will grow.
Yeah.
Who will be able to resist?
100%. 100%.
You won't be able to resist. It's as simple as that. Mm. The amount of money that you get compared to the fines are laughable.
That's it.
You know, we're talking about guys driving around Ferrari, Dean.
Yeah.
That's how much money they make on the black market. It is done.
It's crazy,
done. It's been done for years, it's and crazy. Now it'll be even more ripe, for sure.
And let's give our listeners a scale of what we're talking about here. If I was a commercial fisherman, now I can use this as a classic example. If I had 15 kingfish on my boat, right? And let's put them in at an average of say 7 kilo a fish, right?
Correct.
So that's 77. So I had 105 kilos of kingfish on my boat. If I was a commercial fisherman and I came into you and I had 105 kilos of kingfish, what would you pay me?
Current prices, you're looking at close to $2,000.
$2,000 worth of fish.
Yep.
If I walked into you in the back door and I offered you, 105 kilos, not saying that you get involved in this kind of stuff, we're talking black market now, what would I get paid for it?
Well, look, that's anyone's guess really, but yeah, I guess that's something that, if you get your guys that are up for doing that, if you were to walk into a shop and say, look, here's all this, it's worth $2,000, you give me $1,000, they're not going to say no. You're 100%, not going to say no.
100%. So realistically, boys,
yeah.
I've spent 8 hours out there.
Yeah.
It's cost me, my boat's quite economical, so it's cost me...
50 cents.
$50 in fuel. Right, it's cost me $50 in fuel. We've caught all the bait. It's cost me probably $150 in hooks and broken lines and sinkers. I still made $900.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean?
That's one day.
Tax-free dollars.
One day.
That's what they're enticing, tax-free.
It's a worry. It really is a worry.
100%. Yeah. Now, as I said, this is something that you've got a good business and you don't get involved in things like this, but there are other people who do.
Oh, mate.
Other people who would not even think twice about me walking into their shop and saying, here's 105 kilos of kingfish, give me $1,000 and I walk away. Nobody knows, nobody's any wiser about it, you know?
For sure. And I think the fisheries are well aware that there's probably going to be a spike in that sort of activity.
Mm.
They're definitely going to have to ramp things up. And look, even more so, I think, than the fish shops and that side of things. But you're basically your little backyard angler moving stuff on to the likes of restaurants. I think that's going to be one that they're really going to have to keep their eye on, because
that's hard, isn't it?
Well, how easy is it for someone to go out get their bag of whiting that are worth close to $10 a pop?
Yep.
Walk them into a little restaurant or a pub or something like that and have a sweet deal with the chef. And
yep.
There you go. There's your 150 or 200 bucks in your rocket.
Easy thing to do. And if you're a good enough fisherman, you can nail them.
Absolutely.
Like you said, people drive around Ferraris doing stuff like that.
I've
you know
seen
what
them,
I mean?
Mate. I mean, in the 60s and 70s when the abalone poaching was ripe, my God.
Yeah, crazy.
It was just, you know.
I often wonder, don't they think about things like this? Tommy, you've been in the industry for a long time now. This is obviously something that's really close to your heart. It's hit you. You said you've gone from anger to disappointment now. Where can you see something like this going? What are you thinking is the future on something like this?
Unfortunately, I see it as spreading out even more so than it has. We saw Western Port go about 8 years ago. We've now seen Port Phillip. It won't be long until the areas around Lakes Entrance and then down around Welshpool and that area are done as well. There's just a massive push at the moment to make sure that commercial fishing basically has no interaction at all with the recreational side of things. And it has most definitely been pushed by some personalities in the TV and in the radio industry.
Yep.
And it just so happens that they're fairly well tied up in the recreational fishing side of the business as well. And it works for them to get people on side, and it works for them to get more people out there fishing and spending money on bait and fishing rods. And
yep.
Look, I don't see a problem with that. I think the more the merrier.
Yep.
But let's leave something there for the people who haven't got the boat and haven't got the rods and haven't got maybe the time or the money to go out and do their own fishing.
Mm. And Tommy, you said it is a sustainable fishery that we have here. Tommy, if they hadn't cut the netting in Western Port, would Western Port be fishing as good as it's fishing today?
Look, the amount of commercial fishing that happened in Western Port for close to the 10 years leading up to that buyout, there were three or four netters working that bay. Port Phillip Bay, we've had, I think, close to 27 or 30 that have been working it consistently. So I don't see that what the commercial fishery coming out of Western Port, I don't see it as being a big amount.
Yep.
I think it's always been a great fishery. But I think it comes back to what we were talking about before, is that it's not so much that the fish are there now, but the effort is there now.
Yeah.
People are fishing year round. People are fishing day and night.
Yeah.
The boats are getting bigger.
Yep.
And people are just finding it a lot more comfortable to go and find things.
Very, very easy. Certainly technology and equipment has made it easy.
Technology is a good thing, but at the same time, it's also a bad thing for that sort of stuff.
It's taken a lot of skill out of it, hasn't it, Chuck? Let's be honest. Yeah. You can drive over a patch of fish now. My sounder, mate, I can be doing 50 kilometres an hour. Right? And my sounder will still pick up fish. It'll go over it and I'll see a patch of fish and I'll slow down and go back over it and slow get myself doing, you know, three or four knots and I'll get a clear picture. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So it's cheating. Technology's made it an easy thing to do.
It's only going to get, well, better and better, I suppose you could say, or worse and worse, depending on which way you look at it.
Yeah.
But look, interesting stuff. Well said, mate. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, too. It's a shame. It's a shame.
I still maintain that something will have to happen. The current government, like most governments, will go.
They will, but okay. You've got to remember that the current government only made the promise they did to match the promise that was made by the other government at the time.
But so that's only because there was an election.
But Charlie, what you have to understand here, and this is the way it works, the current government has made this, has done this, has called this. Mm. There's not enough people calling against it for the new government to worry about this issue. So even if a new government comes in, because there's no noise being made about it.
Things can change though, Dean. And I'm talking about even if it's just a line fishery, you can't have, it's criminal. You cannot have a state like Melbourne with Port Phillip Bay and all the restaurants around with not local fish.
I agree with you.
It's just ridiculous.
Let's make this clear. I agree. I'm a recreational fisherman. I love my seafood, right?
Yeah.
And I eat whenever I go. 90% of the restaurants I go to, I'll still eat seafood, even though I catch an abundance of it myself, right? And I totally agree with you. But, mate, I'll tell you something else, and I know this for a fact. There is not enough noise being made about this issue by the commercial sector, right? And if there is not enough noise being made, if the noise made by the commercial sector doesn't outweigh the noise being made by the private sector, doesn't matter how many government changes we have,
yeah,
this will not change.
The commercial sector are gone. We know that, right? But isn't there 8 licenses?
I think there's 7. 7 longline or line fishery
licenses.
What
I'm saying, Dean, is when we do get a change of government, and we will, you know, then maybe they might give out some more hand lines to catch whiting and flathead and squid.
I don't know if it's worth the while of a lot of the fishermen doing that. Like they,
ooh, I don't know. It's just the way it's, you know, like you're pulling in there, you get some really good hookers, you get 6 guys on a boat. But anyway, look, time will tell.
I'm telling you both.
Won't happen.
Maybe raised. We can sit here, we can talk
Donald
about it.
Donald Trump has spoken.
It will go across somebody's desk and they will look at it and they'll go, is this going to make a difference to how they feel about me?
Yeah.
No. Next, too hard basket.
Never know.
That's the way they work, mate.
I know that.
It's a shame.
But things might change.
Yeah, all right. And I truly hope they do.
Now, Tommy,
I really do.
We've only got 6 minutes or whatever it is. What's going to be coming up for fish-wise that you're selling in the shop, say, in the next quarter? So the next, you know, 3 months. What do you get?
Okay. Well, I guess we move into the winter fish now. Obviously, we steer away from the local stuff because that's basically not going to happen anymore. We start to move interstate for a few things. So we'll start looking at the South Australian snapper, South Australian kingfish. They'll be coming over.
Too soon.
Nearly there.
South Australian, so that's
pretty close. Someone wants to go home.
Yeah, that's pretty close.
That is fairly close.
Yeah.
That is fairly close. And look at a bit of the deep sea trawl fishers that run in big amounts, like your Blue Grenadiers and your Trevally.
You get your flathead still?
Still be plenty of flathead off lakes.
Yep.
Plenty of that coming through.
Yep.
Generally, yeah, winter, June and July, generally pretty good numbers for them.
Yeah. Still see prawns and oysters.
I'm going to say the prawns running really good at the moment, aren't they, at lakes?
They've had a cracker season.
Yeah.
They've had an absolutely phenomenal season. Oysters are in their absolute prime over winter.
Yep.
They do their thing in summer and then, over winter they're just phenomenal.
Mate, I was in Sydney, speaking of oysters, and, you know, I didn't realise there were all these different types of oysters till I spoke to Con.
Yep.
And we had some oysters and they were... Like, I was in a pretty top-notch restaurant up there too, let me give you the tip. And we had some oysters and I thought to myself, wow, you guys have no idea what a good quality oyster is up here, seriously. They have like a rock oyster or something up there, don't they?
They do. They've got a rock oyster, whereas,
And they're tiny little things too.
They are. They're a different taste.
So your Pacific is where it all come from, isn't it?
I believe so. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, we did an oyster show on the Australian Seafood Show. That was very interesting. It's incredible when you think of all the different seafoods that we have and how they have, you know, basically come to us over the years. And
just on the oysters, we are looking at probably seeing some supply difficulty for them over the next 2 years, because of the situation in Tasmania.
Yeah,
they've had about 80% of their stock wiped out. And something that will probably take them quite a few years to regenerate from.
Okay.
I didn't know that.
That's due to...
So that's just Tasmania?
Just Tasmania.
The Coffin Bay ones and all that, that's fine?
South Australia is still healthy. So it was a Pacific oyster mortality syndrome that went through, did massive damage in Tassie. The big hurdle for South Australia is that they would get most of their spat from Tasmania. So they're going to have to quickly look into sourcing and growing their own spat. But it's going to put massive pressure on them as well, because while Tassie's out of action, everyone's going to be diving on the South Aussie ones.
There's a lot there, though, at Coffin Bay, a lot of different operations. Have you been yourself?
I've been to Port Lincoln and I've been to Coffin Bay.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Beautiful water. Really beautiful water.
Supply and demand.
All right, fishing report, my friend. This weekend's not looking too good at all.
No, I don't have too much to report, mate. I haven't been fishing since I went for the kingfish. What about yourself?
Well, we'll finish off with a bit of a report. Port Phillip Bay actually launched at St. Leonard's in Con's boat.
Yep.
Around about 4 o'clock in the morning, 4:30, went across to the areas around Mount Island there, and put a bait in the water which consisted of pippy and cuttlefish.
Yep.
And within 2 minutes, bang, first one, and they just didn't stop for about an hour or so.
One after the other.
And it was really interesting, as I said to you before, as the tide changed or slowed down, etc., we get different things coming through. Mm. So we'd get heaps and heaps of puffer fish, for example, right, and then they would go, and then we'd get sharks coming through, like Port Jackson's, for example, then flathead, and then the whiting again. Really crazy. But
lesson here is, a lot of people, when they're fishing for whiting, will get the different fish come through, and I've often said fish through it.
That's all we did.
Put up with the puffer, put up with the Port Jackson's, put up, just fish through it and they will come. Fantastic. So, well, they're on and they're going hard, and I know there are reds being caught, so keep going. Tommy, mate, absolute pleasure having you here. You are a gentleman. Love talking to you. Love talking to your family. Love eating your food even more and using your bait. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
pal.
Tommy. I need some more, full moon coming up at the end of the month.
Charlie boy.
You know what that means.
It's good to see you, my friend. Mitch, good to see you too.
Have a good one.
I'm Dean.
I'm Charlie.
And I'm Tommy.
Bayside Adventures out for another week.